Now, the Democratic National Convention wrapped up last night. It was a mostly virtual week that combined live speeches, pre-recorded talks, and a fireworks display. That came after Joe Biden's speech last night accepting the party's nomination. Throughout his address, Biden drew a distinction between himself and President Trump as a matter of light and darkness.
Here and now, I give you my word. If you entrust me with the presidency, I will draw on the best of us, not the worst. I'll be an ally of the light, not the darkness. It's time for us, for we the people, to come together.
Republicans will respond at their convention next week, and we'll cover that here as well. Right now, we're looking back at the DNC with Eric Heberlig. He's a professor of political science and public administration at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. He's co-author of the book American Cities and the Politics of Party Conventions. Eric, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's an unusual year, obviously, for conventions. What are your thoughts on how the virtual format worked out for Democrats this week?
Moving to the virtual format was something, obviously, that had never happened before, so none of us were too sure of what to expect. And I think the Democrats did as well as they hoped to, probably better. There are all kinds of logistical hazards that can come with these type of virtual technologies, and things seem to go very smoothly. I thought they did a number of things to try to take advantage of the virtual technologies. That worked really well. Some other ideas they had that were worth trying that I think didn't work as well. I think the things that worked really well, the roll call of the states, which is typically part of the convention, where each state talks about the number of votes it's giving to each of the candidates, accompanies that with a long-winded speech about the merits of their state. And it's usually pretty tedious, and the networks cut away from it. This time I was watching, and they cut away from it, and I flipped to another station to find it because it was fascinating to see the delegates with the scenery of their home state behind them, and they kept it to 30 seconds, and it was really interesting. Other things they tried, like having Joe Biden coordinate little talk sessions with various people. I thought that was a good effort. I don't think that worked as well. But that trial and error is, you know, what you have to expect.
You've written about party conventions before, as we mentioned. What are parties trying to accomplish in a convention, and did the Democrats meet those guidelines?
So they're trying to do two things. One, they're trying to unify and mobilize their party supporters. And the second is they're using the convention as the opening of the general election campaign to persuade swing voters to come to their side. I think the Democrats were united this time out of their intense opposition to Donald Trump. I think the virtual convention helped them control the message that might have been more diverse or contentious. If it were on the floor of the convention, we saw those splits between the Sanders and Clinton factions in 2016. I think they did well in communicating to persuadable voters, although I'm not sure a whole lot of them were watching, in that they had Republicans and former Republicans vouch for Joe Biden. They did a good job of conveying Biden's personality, his background, his empathy for the public, and they did a good job of leading up to the high point of his acceptance speech on Thursday night, which seemed to go quite well.
We are talking about the Democratic National Convention this week with Eric Heberlig from the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you watch some or all? What did you think? How did it work? Did you hear the messages from Democrats that you wanted to hear or were worried about hearing? 800-642-1234 is the number. Eric, you are in a similar camp with us here in Wisconsin. You expected to get a big show, a big convention, Democrats here, Republicans there, and it didn't happen. Do you think that, the parties have to show some diplomacy to the places that might feel a little slighted by not getting what they were hoping for?
Yeah, Milwaukee and Charlotte got ripped off this year. There's no way to put lipstick on it. And I think this is going to have some important repercussions for 2024. The way cities get the honor of hosting these conventions is that the national parties ask them to bid for it, and the cities basically commit themselves to put a lot of fundraising effort and planning effort into hosting these big events. And the trade-off for that is that the city hopes to get a lot of direct spending from delegates and the media showing up and buying hotel rooms and eating catered food and renting taxis. And the cities also want a lot of public relations benefits out of it, as the national and international media show up and do stories on their cities and use their city skyline as the backdrop for the visuals of the conventions. And Charlotte and Milwaukee didn't get that this year. They didn't get any direct spending. They didn't get any of the public relations benefits.
Getting back to the messaging now for Democrats, former Vice President Biden and many others focused on their ideas, their for democracy, their vision for America, and their contrast with President Trump. Getting listen to Biden again, he mentioned that while talking about President Trump's response to a white supremacist attack in Charlottesville in 2017 that killed one person. Here's a listen to Joe Biden responding to the president's response.
It was a wake-up call for us as a country. And for me, a call to action. At that moment, I knew I'd have to run. Because my father taught us that silence was complicity. And I can never remain silent or complicit. At the time, I said we're in the battle for the soul of this nation. And we are.
Can you talk about the contrast Biden and other Democrats made with the president and making the case that there's a lot at stake here?
Absolutely. That was a theme of the week. His performance, particularly on the COVID crisis, his performance on racial reconciliation and the Floyd protests. As Biden put it in his speech, his ending emphasis, the difference between love and hope and light and the contrast with the Republicans. And in Barack Obama's speech, arguing that democracy was at stake. So the Democrats put in very stark terms what they think is at stake in this election in order to motivate people to come out and vote.
Another issue that came up, at least from one Wisconsin speaker at the event, was healthcare related to COVID-19, but not just about that. The U.S. Supreme Court is going to hear a challenge to the Affordable Care Act, I believe, a week after Election Day. Wisconsin Senator Tammy Baldwin talked about the issue. Here's a listen to her and some of her personal story.
When I was 9 years old, I got sick, really sick. I was hospitalized, but since my grandparents were the ones raising me and our family's health plan didn't cover grandkids, they were forced to pay out of pocket for my 3-month hospital stay. I got better, but the insurance companies didn't.
Now, one read on Democratic success in 2018, Eric, is that they focused on this healthcare issue. Did you hear as much about that, apart from Senator Baldwin there, at this convention?
No, their policy emphases were kind of scattered. And they had different policy emphases every night, but it led to a bit of incoherence thematically because they kind of jumped from one thing to the next. I guess the upside of that is that Democrats tend to have a broad variety of policy interests across their coalition, so everybody could hear their issue discussed on a different night, and likewise persuadable voters hopefully heard something about what they were interested in hearing across the convention.
We're talking to Eric Heberlig, professor of political science and public administration at UNC Charlotte, about this week's Democratic National Convention. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What did you think of what you watched, if you watched, from the convention this week? How did you watch? Did you watch on live TV, live streaming, or did you watch the highlights the next morning? How do you think this format worked out? Did you hear issues talked about that you wanted to? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Eric Heberlig, professor of political science and public administration at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte, looking at the Democratic National Convention over the course of the week. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you watch some or all? What did you think? What stood out to you in terms of messaging, in terms of this virtual format? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's bring on a caller now. Charlie is with us in Milwaukee. Charlie, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was going to ask your guest real quickly if he thought the virtual convention assisted in the Democratic Party presenting Joe Biden with multiple facets, such that it seems more confusing. They had Republicans who seemed to be saying he was a moderate, yet Bernie Sanders says he's going to be the most progressive president since FDR. An example would be, are they for or against Medicare for all? They didn't touch on China, for example. Is Joe going to address the situation with his son Hunter, or are they just going to ignore it? I didn't find that the convention clarified the situation of what they're running on, and I was hoping your guest could comment on whether he thought Joe Biden is more clarified now than he was before or after the convention.
Charlie, thanks for the call. Of course, Hunter Biden on stage, or the equivalent of a stage for part of that. The Trump campaign posting ads over the last couple of days saying Biden has sold out fully to the far left of the party. What do you think, Eric, about how Joe Biden has tried to thread the needle here?
Yeah, they clearly emphasized Biden's personal story, his biography, to contrast what they see as his decency versus Trump's character, and went lighter on spelling out policy details. Now, they did talk about a number of policy areas pretty much in the earlier hour, so it may not have been covered in the primetime elements that many people watched. But even so, they spent very little on foreign policy, which the caller mentioned. To some extent, that surprised me. I thought we'd hear more about Trump's unwillingness to stand up to Vladimir Putin. We did hear that a little bit, but I thought we'd hear a lot more of it. It was certainly an emphasis on the COVID crisis and racial justice as the policy focus in the convention.
Thanks a lot for the call, Charlie. We'll go back to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Peter is with us in Stoughton. Peter, hi.
Good afternoon. One thing that I was surprised to be enjoying was the lack of a crowd. The speakers could get on with things without having to worry about a whole bunch of people getting up and down and clapping and this and that. So they were able to provide a lot more content, or so I thought. And I was surprised at this. But not having a crowd around was a positive thing for me.
Interesting take, Peter, because a lot of times, Eric, people are saying, oh, the lack of the crowd, you don't have that sense of enthusiasm, but you get maybe more content while you're not waiting for the applause to die down.
Yeah, I definitely thought the speeches were much more efficient. They went faster when you don't have to wait around for people to stop clapping. I also thought particularly Michelle Obama adapted her speech well. It felt to me like I was sitting across the kitchen table from her and she was having a conversation with me. And I thought that was very effective. I thought other speeches, particularly from politicians who were kind of continuing to give a big speech that they would have given to an arena full of people, I thought those worked less well in this new setting.
Thanks a lot for the call. Samantha joins us now in Whitehall. Samantha, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. The little bit that I had seen of the convention, it just seemed like they were mostly trying to bash in Trump and how to get him out. But I was kind of confused because they didn't really give a clear indication of how they would be, you know, wanting to get him out and why, because, you know, that's the thing I was wondering is why, you know, because that's just what it seemed like to me, that they really didn't give very clear indication on what they were going, what their goal was on getting him out, I guess.
Samantha, thanks for the call. Samantha's not alone. Pete on Facebook wrote the convention. He says it's a sales pitch. Sad they talked more about Trump than what they're going to actually do and how to pay for it. What do you make of that balance between attacking the incumbent and laying out their own vision for governing?
That's a balance they need to strike. They need to do both. And the challenge here, unlike 2016, it's there wasn't an incumbent. This time there is. Anytime there's an incumbent on the ballot, what the out party has to do is convince people that, first of all, there needs to be a change. If people aren't convinced there needs to be a change, then it doesn't matter what the party promises to do differently. Part of what I think they were trying to do was have other people lay out the case against Trump to try to free up Kamala Harris and Joe Biden to talk more about their biographies and what their plans were. I think we got the biography, the character heavy presentations on both Harris and Biden, and got less emphasis on policy. And I'm sure they thought it through, but you know, as your caller indicated, that may be a risk. I thought one of the criticisms of Hillary Clinton in 2016 was that her campaign was too focused on Trump's liabilities and not focused enough on what she would do if she were president. And so I was kind of surprised, too, that the Democrats didn't spend more time talking about their vision for the future rather than just telling us what many of us already know about Trump's character.
Thanks for that call. We are talking about the Democratic National Convention this week with Eric Heberlig from the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. Democrats have made a lot of the president's comment about people dying of COVID, saying it is what it is in an interview. Some people saying they've tried to make that a catchphrase and hang the president's words on him. And that might account for the character focus you're talking about with Joe Biden and kind of the personal side of him showing him grieving and connecting with people and trying to raise that as part of the character contrast. Do you see that as a strategy? If so, do you see it as a good strategy?
Absolutely. One thing you're trying to do in any political messaging is draw a contrast between the candidates to give people a clear choice and hope they will choose the side of the choice that you're promoting. So Trump's perhaps callous response there gives the Democrats a clear ability to contrast Joe Biden's experience with death in his family, the compassion he has that many people attested to throughout the convention, they want people to see that, hey, Joe Biden understands real people like you, understands pain, can help us get through this crisis in ways that Trump has not.
Go back to our callers. Polly is with us in Wauwatosa. Polly, hi.
Hi. I was so glad I stayed up way beyond my bedtime and to hear the speech that came right from Joe Biden's heart through the whole thing. Nothing written by someone else, you know, written to draw applause every 2 minutes here and there. It was Joe Biden from the heart, and to have a president with heart is something we can all use after the last 4 years.
Polly, thanks a lot for the call. I don't know if there were speechwriters involved or not, Eric, but that sense anyway that came through, Polly says that it came from the heart.
I'm sure there were speechwriters involved, but you know, their job is to channel and put in the most compelling way the ideas of the candidate. And we saw, you know, very effectively weave into his speech his personal story. He talked about the lessons from his father. He talked about his experiences in losing his wife and daughter. He talked about the death of his son, Beau, and how those are important motivations. Again, part of what he was doing was telling us about his character and how that will serve us if he is elected, and how those experiences motivate him into public service and the type of issues he thinks are important.
Thanks a lot for that call. In our last minute, Eric, can you preview for us? We've been talking about the Democratic convention that mostly wasn't here in Milwaukee. What are you expecting from the Republican convention that mostly won't be in your city of Charlotte?
I think we've seen how Trump likes to communicate over the last 5 years. So I think we'll see more of the same. I think the Republicans will have observed what the Democrats did in their virtual convention, and will have the ability to take things that work and try to build on it and not do the things that they don't think will work. I think we'll see some of the real people giving their testimonials. I thought that worked really well about the Democratic National Convention. So I think we'll see more of that from the Republicans.
Eric, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Eric Heberlig is a professor of political science and public administration at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. He's co-author of the book American Cities and the Politics of Party Conventions. He joined us for a look at the Democratic National Convention this week. Next week, we'll be covering the Republican National Convention. Listen in on Monday and Friday for those conversations. You can weigh in with your thoughts on what you've seen this last week, what you're watching for next week over on the Ideas Network Facebook page.